You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
A 3CR supporter.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning. You are listening to Friday Breakfast Green Left Radio. Thanks for joining us. It's Friday, the 21st of November, 2025, and it's just hit 7:01 a.m. This show is being broadcasted live from the 3CR studios, an apartheid-free zone, and we recognise that we are broadcasting on stolen land. Land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung people, we pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging, and acknowledge the continuation of cultural, spiritual and educational practices of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. The struggle for First Nations sovereignty is deeply connected with the struggles against racism, imperialism and capitalism. We stand with all First Nations peoples in their struggle for sovereignty and justice. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm really excited to be joined today by guest presenter and folk musician and political activist Candice Alicia. And I'm hoping your mic's working. Do you want to speak into the mic?
It is. I can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, wonderful. It's really good to have you here with us, Candice, for the first time. And we are going to be interviewing you a little bit later and hopefully hear one of your tunes. And yeah, we do have a very packed show this morning for you listeners. So our first interview is with Candice Alicia, and then at 7:25 we're going to be hearing from Dr. Sade, an activist involved in the campaign against the closure of CoHealth. Some positive news there as well. Then at 7:40, Tracksuit from The Herd, a band and founder of Elephant Tracks, is going to be on the show. And he's also going to be talking to us about performing at the People's Blockade. Also, we're going to have on the show later on at 8:10, punk hip-hop rapper based in Nam, Melbourne, Mudrat, is coming into the studio to chat with us. We're looking forward to that interview as well. But before we interview Candice, I'm just going to go into some news headlines. The UN Security Council has endorsed Donald Trump's Gaza peace plan, and a statement has been issued by the Palestinian Communist Party in response, saying it firmly and unequivocally rejects the latest Security Council resolution concerning the Gaza Strip, a resolution that emerged from a US initiative entirely biased towards the interests of the Zionist occupation and complicit in the ongoing aggression against our people. It's not a step towards genuine peace, they say. Rather, it seeks to impose an unacceptable form of international trusteeship over the Gaza Strip and reflects the true nature of the American role in supporting the occupation's policies and its ongoing attempts to reshape the conflict according to the enemy's terms. The party reiterates its steadfast position that Palestinian resistance in all its forms is a legitimate right of a people under occupation, a right rooted in historical principles and international conventions that guarantee the people's struggle against colonialism in all its forms. Israel has also committed another massacre in a Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon. Just reading from People's Dispatch, at least 22 people were killed and dozens injured in an Israel aerial attack on the evening of November 19th. Israeli forces targeted Ain al-Hilwa Palestinian refugee camp in the city of Sidon in southern Lebanon. And the IOF alleged that it waged the assault against a Hamas-run military compound in the camp used to train operatives to attack Israel. But however, Lebanese media reports refuted those claims, clarifying the aerial raid targeted a car in a hangar adjacent to Khalid Ibn al-Walid Mosque inside the camp. The Palestinian resistance movement also concerned that it has no military facilities in Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon. From the pages, I'll just go into one more news headline, I reckon, if we have time. Maybe just one more, maybe onto like local news. Melbourne's tram network fails to meet national accessibility standards. Only 18% of Melbourne's tram services are accessible for commuters right now with mobility restrictions, according to Victoria's Auditor General. I'm just reading from ABC News here. So right now, these commuters often have to wait up to half an hour longer for trams with lower floors. And there's an investigation being done by the Department of Transport and Planning to improve the tram network. About one in five Victorians have a disability. And this is pretty atrocious to hear this. Just for listeners out there that aren't aware, or maybe they are aware, there is a Sydney Road Accessible Tram Stop campaign group that is very active in campaigning for permanent accessible tram stops on Sydney Road for everyone. And they do really great work in the disability rights space. They have been organising rallies for years now. And Marybeck Council have recognised the campaign as well. So visit the Sydney Road Accessible Tram Stop campaign Facebook page to see what they are planning next and support them. Actually, they do have a protest coming up on Saturday, December 6th, in time for International Disability Day, and that's going to be at 11 a.m. Coburg Library. All right, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to go to our first interview.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, 8:55 a.m. on your dial. And we're really excited to have Candice Alicia, who is a folk musician and political activist, right here in the studio. Welcome, Candice.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we did want to ask you a little bit about your music. I have seen you perform at the Drunken Poet, and it was a very powerful performance. I mean, your songs have very powerful lyrics, and I guess, you know, we are going to hear one of those songs later, but maybe just tell us a little bit about your music and how you've been influenced.
Yeah, well, I originally got my start as a heavy metal singer.
Oh.
Way back when.
Cool.
And much like in punk music, there's a lot of political subtext in a lot of like punk music and metal music. So I always kind of had that inspiration around me. And then as I got older and I started proper pursuing music, it was one of those things where I couldn't not, like, if you have the opportunity to spread a good message and to potentially help people, like, how could you not?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Oh, that sounds like a great start to your career. And Candice, how long have you been singing for, and what inspires you to keep going? Because I know that it is a tough industry. It's not, if you're not part of like if you're not signed up to a record or you're not making lots and lots of money, it can be sort of a struggle for a lot of local musicians who really do it for because their love of music and even getting political messages out. I guess what inspires you to keep going?
Well, yeah, I heard the advice like years and years ago that if you can see yourself doing anything else, do that, because that will be easier. The music industry is so difficult. But no, I've kind of done it forever. Both my parents were musicians, so it was something that was always around. Nice growing up with musicians for parents, because a lot of people want to pursue music, but they have that push from their parents or from outside forces to like do something, get a real job, do something proper. But luckily I never had that. My parents were very encouraging of me being a musician because, family business.
Yeah.
It can be hard, and I can totally understand where a lot of local musicians come from when they take a break or they feel like they can't keep going, because I feel like that all the time.
Mm.
But yeah, it's just music's been the one consistent thing in my whole life, so I think it'll continue to be forever.
Now, Candace, I have seen you marching in the Palestine rallies, and you are an activist. You've been part of the protest movement for years and years, and you are sorry to say what you are. You could probably say more about this, but you are anti-capitalist. You're feminist. You're a socialist, and I guess ask you the question: what do you think is wrong with the system that we live under currently?
I think that the system's main priority is and always has been profit over people.
Mm.
And I think as socialists, our main objective is to put people first. You can't keep allowing things like Palestine or like the femicide happening in Australia keep happening because money is more important than people.
Mm.
That's never going to be sustainable. And it is destroying our communities, because we're losing people because the government doesn't care. Our sense of communities are falling apart because people aren't putting each other first.
Yeah, it's make profit or die, basically.
Yeah.
And tell us about the song you are working on right now, Candace. I know you've got a new song coming up, and it's important to you.
I do. I'm currently writing a song about the Palestine genocide. And you actually don't know this, Chloe.
Mm.
But you somewhat inspired this song. The first time Chloe and I met, she came up to me at a protest and asked to take a photo of my sign that I was carrying, and asked me about why I protest. And I said to you, if you can't fight, I will fight for you. If you can't stand, I will hold you up. And that is part of the chorus of this new song. Because as soon as I said that to you, I've always remembered it. Because I think it really sums up why I do what I do without me even knowing until I said that to you. So that is part of the new song.
Well, that is brilliant. I don't think... I know Palestine's the inspiration, but I don't think I've ever inspired anyone to write a song. And, really grateful to have met you at that rally.
Yeah.
I do have that photo of you. So maybe for listeners, we'll put it in the show notes if we can, or we'll actually not in the show notes, we'll put it on social media, because that's the first time we met, and
and we just kept running into each other at protests.
Yeah, that's right. It's really been good talking to you this morning, Candace, and if you like, maybe we can wrap up the interview so we get a chance to hear you sing. I'm assuming, because you've brought your guitar with you.
I have.
What song are you gonna, or what are you gonna sing for us?
So this song gets a lot of attention at shows. It's called Boys We Boys, and I wrote it about how Australia has such a horrible domestic violence and rape culture problem, And a lot of those issues are usually swept up with the swept under the rug by saying, you know, boys be boys. It's just what they do. It's not what they do. Yeah, well, it is what they do, but they shouldn't. Mm. So I wrote this song about it. And yeah, it's called Boys Will Be Boys.
Jimmy's dad, he left early. No, his mama were much better. He resented those who gave him a life, so he took it out on his lovers. Now first the courts, they went easy, young Jimmy, promising young man. But now the girls are piling up, there's blood in young Jimmy's hands. Well, some boys love sons, some boys love daughters, some boys cry when they lose their mothers. And fathers, please stay and teach your boys to be better, 'cause boys will be boys, shouldn't mean hurting others. The Lily Jean, the boys were mean, but her mama said it's 'cause they liked her. Now she's grown and Brett throws stones, but she thinks it's 'cause he really loves her. Now he can buy all the flowers in Rome, all the gifts the money can pay. But now the girls are piling up, there's blood in young Jimmy's hands. Well, some boys love sons, some boys love daughters, some boys cry mothers. And fathers, please stay, teach your boys to be better, 'cause boys will be boys, shouldn't mean hurting others. Ooh, say their names. Well, some boys love sons, some boys love daughters, some boys cry when they lose their mothers. And fathers, please stay and teach your boys to be better, 'cause boys will be boys, shouldn't mean hurting.
You were just listening to Candice Alicia with her track Boys Will Be Boys, right here live in the studio at 3CR. And yeah, I hope listeners enjoyed that. We're going to go to a quick break and we'll be back with more Green Left Radio.
Hello, I'm Z the People from 47 Soul. You're listening to Palestine Remembered on 3CR Community Radio. Free Palestine.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio, your Friday breakfast show on 3CR, and having a lot of fun in the studio today because I'm joined by Candice Alicia, who is an activist and political activist and musician, and enjoying some live music. And we're having a very musical show because we're also speaking to Tracksuit from The Herd later on, and also Mudrat is coming into the studio as well. Before our next interview, maybe we'll just read some pages from Green Left. So COP30 is coming to an end. That is the global climate conference organized by the United Nations. The Tropical Forest Forever Facility, the TFFF, was launched at the 30th United Nations Climate Change Conference that is being held in Belém, Brazil, over November 10th to the 21st. And it's where leaders and delegates from more than 190 countries get together and hold negotiations. The TFFF is being promoted as a once-in-a-generation initiative for tropical forest conservation and climate action by aiming to raise billions of dollars each year to halt deforestation. Governments, banks, and corporate conservation NGOs, including the World Wildlife Fund and Greenpeace, have welcomed the scheme. However, TFFF is not a real solution to the climate crisis nor deforestation. It is a green capitalism latest colonial scheme designed to guarantee profits for corporations and governments in the global north by deepening debt and financial dependency in the global south. Meanwhile, the amount of money provided for forest protection and the communities that defend them would be marginal. There are massive amounts of wealth and that could fund the land rights and territorial autonomy of indigenous peoples who are really at the front lines of resisting and dismantling a system predicated on environmental and human exploitation. Organizations can sign on to a statement opposing the Tropical Forest Forever Facility. Reading from Democracy Now! And in relation to COP30, one in 25 attendees at COP30 are actually fossil fuel lobbyists. So a record number of 1,600 fossil fuel lobbyists are attending the climate talks right now in Belém, outnumbering nearly every national delegation. Climate activists have been warning us for years that fossil fuel companies treat COP as just another space to shape global policy in their favour. One example is the decarbonisation charter launched at COP28, whose signatories went on to approve 65% of all new oil and gas reserves globally in 2024. A good news story is a major protest did take place last Saturday. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets of the host city in Belém, this host city Belém, to demand urgent climate action. It was led by Indigenous people and was the first major climate protest at a United Nations climate conference since 2021, because protests were banned by Egypt and the United Arab Emirates and Azerbaijan, the three previous host countries. The people demonstrating denounced corporate greed, war, and imperialism while demanding urgent action to reduce the use of fossil fuels and to respect Indigenous sovereignty. We're going to go to a quick break and we'll come back with our second interview. Mm-hmm.
The state government has sold 578 hectares of public land to private developers. They're building private-public partnership model housing over public housing land, and it's just not on.
Housing is just massively expensive. It's never been effective in this country to rely on the market to provide decent housing for people.
Rent has risen by 21%. That's median rent across the country as of January this year.
As the rents keep rising, so must we. And we must stand together as a collective, because this war cannot be won by the few. It will only be victorious by the many.
3CR. Stay tuned. Stay radical. This is a rapacious expansion of privatisation, which is going to change the face of the city that we live in.
It's not share, it's not making the housing crisis go away. It's really about the big end of town.
It's a shame job.
It's a transfer. It's a theft of public wealth, which is going to worsen the housing crisis.
The government is giving public land to private developers. Why would you do that? Why would you give all these assets over to the biggest bully in town?
We're looking down at a future that we don't know what's going to happen. Where are we going to get moved to? Dandenong, or away from our communities and away from the services that we need?
This is a line in the sand for not only the public housing tenants, but for a Victorian society.
3CR, here to stay.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio here live from the 3CR studios, and we're also joined by Zane as a third presenter, also a musician. So many musicians.
Not as active these days, but in the past, got around it a bit. Yes, fashionable lateness. I'm bringing it back.
Yeah. We're really happy to have Dr. Shadi on the line. Dr. Shadi has spent 8 years working in Victorian public hospitals, now working in a Melbourne community health centre. They're an activist involved in the campaign against the closure of CoHealth and a member of Victorian Socialists. Welcome, Shadi.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's really good to have you on the show, Shadi. Listeners might be aware, or maybe they haven't been, some might not have been following this, but CoHealth had previously announced it would be shutting three of its Melbourne clinics in December due to funding issues. Shadi, can you give us an update on what is happening now with this campaign?
We woke up yesterday to very exciting news. The Labor government at the federal level has stepped in to give us a $1.5 million cash injection to keep the GP services open until mid-2026 while a review is undertaken. Huge victory for the community level. Certainly the 12,500 patients who are about to lose access to GP services and primary care who were, fearful for their lives. Very, very grateful for that news, and certainly hard won. I mean, it was, people should feel very proud. The campaign was really active, angry, organised. Hundreds of people fought for this over the last 3 weeks. It certainly didn't happen passively, but not a total victory. Importantly, pharmacy services slated to close on December 19, CoHealth have still announced that counselling services across all three sites are still planning to close on December 19. So certainly more questions up in the air and more things that we want to be organising around, but huge win for the community for sure.
Well, here at 3CR and Green Left, we really want to congratulate you and everyone in the community that has really built that community pressure over the last few weeks or even months, maybe, for this reprieve for CoHealth services and forcing the government to act. Shadi, could you maybe, you did touch on it, but would you be able to just explain what the reprieve would mean for CoHealth community health centres, and also the importance of you know, well, where to now for this campaign as well?
What it means is that the closure of the GP services is on pause until July 2026, while a review is undertaken. And so I think it's important. There's a couple of layers to, you know, the way that we have to organise from here on out, because certainly the pause doesn't mean a commitment to keeping the GP services open next year. It's not sort of a commitment to maintaining the community health model long term. So it's possible that Labor is just sort of buying time to sort of hose down the justifiable anger that has been putting pressure on them for the last few weeks. And so it's really important for us to make sure that that review has got sort of the appropriate scope of practice. It's not just looking at sort of funding from CoHealth, but is looking at sort of holistically what the services are providing and the impact of that, and as well as that review being really public. But in the immediate term as well, we're still organising around the closure of the pharmacy and the counselling services. The methadone program, there's an integrated methadone program run through CoHealth and that it is dispensed through the pharmacy. And so certainly a cut to that integrated program will mean that a lot of people who rely on that service will lose access. We all know about how sort of devastatingly underfunded the public and community mental health services are. So losing counselling services is also certainly not an insignificant loss. More to be done in the immediate term, as well as looking into, you know, keeping the pressure on during that 8-month review period to make sure that we're continuing to make our sort of priority about these community health centres known, and continue with the demands that all of these community health centres remain open into the next year without interruptions in services and without reductions in services as well. I think Victorian Socialist certainly has been making the point as to the context of these closures as well. The fact that, you know, three GP clinic closures closing would deprive 12,000 patients of essentially primary care, I think speaks to the decline and the crisis in the public health system as a whole. So as part of this campaign, it's really important for us not to forget to maintain demand for an expansion of Medicare funding to ensure universal access to bulk billing primary care for everybody, not just those who rely on community health services. So lots to still be done, but I think, you know, as you said, it's important to take a moment to congratulate everyone who has, you know, fought so hard and, turned this, you know, individual outrage and anger into collective action that were able to pressure the government in such a meaningful way and win such a significant outcome.
Shari, this is Zane here. Thanks heaps for speaking with us this morning.
No worries at all.
I agree. It's bloody good to see the community get this initial win. But from the sound of it, this is just pushing back the event horizon of closure to mid-next year. What would you say is the root cause of CoHealth announcing that they, you know, can't keep going? Like, how is it really going to be fixed in the long term?
Yeah. So, I mean, complex and simple at the same time. I think fundamentally the root cause is funding. Basically, for the last 3 decades, primary care, but community health in particular, has been underfunded. It used to be that community health centres were a national program. Now, really, it only exists in Victoria, and that's pretty devastating for not just, you know, Victorians, but, you know, people who are across the country. Fundamentally, the Medicare funding has been stagnant over decades. The bulk billing rates have fallen catastrophically over a long period of time, despite the fact that, you know, as we know, that preventative and primary care that happens in the community is fundamentally the most, you know, efficient way of ensuring good health long term. certainly more efficient than people, you know, presenting to emergency departments with late-stage disease, certainly more efficient than people who now have significant morbidities and have to make use of, you know, more expensive and broader-ranging resources. And so, you know, the fight really has to be looking at those upstream causes and the sort of long-term deprioritization of primary and preventative healthcare and fundamentally, you know, free and accessible access for everybody, because, you know, as we know, it's about, you know, 8% of people last year said that they delayed a visit to a GP because of financial concerns, and that's with an acute issue. Certainly people who aren't going to the GP when they're unwell are not going to a GP for preventative healthcare. So yes, I think a really good point. There's really upstream priorities to focus on, but I think the immediate crisis was so cataclysmic and catastrophic that it really galvanised people into looking at, you know, the state of primary healthcare and the public health system more broadly, and has invigorated a lot of people to get angry and organised, you know, leading to this real big win.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a bit of a kind of David and Goliath battle to defend co-health because you're up against the bulk billing situation. But on the other hand, it's like co-health in some ways is like the canary in the coal mine and could be a catalyst for a much broader push to get the bulk billing situation fixed, which is a problem all across the land, and people can't access a GP and then they're having to pay all these like expensive co-payments.
Mm.
And just the you go.
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I really agree. Certainly, the immediate demand is always about, you know, co-health, and it's important that these, you know, 12,000 of our most vulnerable people who were in Victoria and having no access to medical care is sort of a crisis that was really not tenable and not acceptable to the broader community, and they made that known. But you know, can't talk about co-health without the broader context of how we got here and the sort of systemic austerity and underfunding that has been going on for decades.
Yeah, the prospect of losing access to vital healthcare is scary, but what is more frightening is that a decision like that can just be made to shut down health clinics that would affect tens of thousands of people. And the government didn't really seem to care. They weren't going to, they were just going to allow that to happen and have only really acted because of the community campaign and the pressure on them to stop those closures. Because, I mean, these centres have been let down by the state and federal government for years because they haven't received, well, they haven't been spending what they should have been on them.
I mean, I think you touched on a really important point there as well. The fact that these health services are run by private corporations is a real problem, and certainly something that I think has come out of this campaign. The fact that the boards, which used to be elected and community controlled, have now been put into private hands, and you know, so private unelected people have been able to make decisions that affect 12,000 people is in and of itself pretty atrocious. I think, prioritising a return for these services to go back into community to hands under democratic control and for them to be sort of nationalised, I think, is really important because, you know, you're right. They're not peripheral services. These are crucial life-saving services. And, you know, people brought that up again and again in the campaign. A lot of members of the community from these areas remember when the AGMs for these centres were held in mass tents out the side of the building with hundreds of community members in attendance, translators, across 10 languages. And so to go from such a immediate memory of democratically controlled primary healthcare to this situation is a real indication of how far the government has let the system, you know, fail. And so, yeah, definitely something that is important to prioritise going forward.
Word. Well, we've probably got to wrap it up, but yeah, much respect for this win, and it looks like there's a deep wellspring of outrage in the community, and there's a window now to tap into that and rebuild, like keep the campaign, keep the momentum going, and yeah, try and get a more durable win as of the middle of next year. So yeah, bloody good to see, and much respect.
Thanks so much. I will just say, importantly, there is a rally still going ahead this Sunday, the 23rd, in front of CoHealth in Fitzroy. So I think it's, you know, really important for as many people as possible to come to that, to, you know, continue putting pressure on Labor and say, you know, obviously we see this win as, you know, as a very much a win for us, but certainly immediate demands still to be met and a long-term fight to be had. So important to keep the pressure up, keep eyes on Labor and make sure that they know that we're still across the details and won't just be distracted, you know, by sort of small gains. So yeah, certainly there's that rally this Sunday, and we're having a public meeting next Friday as well in Fitzroy, Victorian Socialists are, to talk about sort of how we've won the campaign so far, the things that we've been able to achieve with the help of sort of the community activation, but also, you know, what is still to fight for and how we're sort of going to continue forward.
Okay, and where's that public meeting next Friday?
So location yet to be determined, but if people follow Socialists in Healthcare or Victorian Socialists on Instagram, that will be announced in the next coming days.
Yeah, sweet. And what time was the rally at CoHealth Fitzroy on Sunday?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock on Sunday.
Brilliant.
Well, we'll see you there, Shadi, and thank you once again for taking the time out this morning to speak to us and for all your work in continuing the fight to defend community healthcare.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Cheers.
Yeah. All right, bye.
This is a rapacious expansion of privatisation, which is going to change the face of the city that we live in.
It's not share. It's not making the housing crisis go away. It's really about the big end of town. It's a shame job.
It's a transfer. It's a theft of public wealth, which is going to worsen the housing crisis.
The government is giving public land to private developers. Why would you do that? Why would you give all these assets over to the biggest bully in town?
We're looking down to a future that we don't know what's going to happen. Where are we going to get moved to? Dandenong or away from our communities and away from the services that we need?
This is a line in the sand for not only the public housing tenants, but for a Victorian society. Society.
3CR, here to stay.
3CR.
This deal really accentuates and is very complementary to the White Australia domestic policy. Here you have not only a white alliance, but an Anglo-Saxon alliance of the ultimate cultural allies of the United States banding together, and the significance that it is aimed at colored peoples, at Asian peoples, at Pacific peoples. This is injecting a horrible racial dimension to this conflict. So I think the US and Australian elites' racist military policies are complementing the increasingly racist domestic policies. So I think, therefore, we really have to look out very, very carefully at this very dangerous synergy between racism on the military front and racism on the domestic front.
Subscribe to 3CR. Where else can you hear radical news, analysis, music, and opinions? Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 03 9419 8377.
Welcome back. You're here with Chloe, Zane and Candice on Green Left Radio on 3CR. And we have Tracksuit from The Herd and founder of Elephant Tracks, on the line. Good morning, Tracksuit.
Hey there, Chloe. How's it going?
Yeah, well, thanks. It's good to have you back on the show.
Yeah, happy to be here.
And congratulations on the release of your third album, The Sun Never Sets. Tell us about this album and also some of the features, like the unreleased cover of Red Gum's 80 Australian classic, I Was Only 19, that's featured. Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, sure. So this was 20-year anniversary now, so cast your mind back to 2005. And also, you know, the label started in 98. Our first heard album was a 2001. And so as you know, like, the label started, like, very lo-fi. We were doing everything ourselves, very independent. You could almost think of it like the punk ethos. We started our distribution ourselves and so on. And as we grew, you know, we started, by 2001, we had, like, a distributor. And then the next album got bigger. But still, we couldn't crack the festival scene. This is the festivals. We were, you know, avid goers of to all the festivals. I was at the very first Big Day Out back in the day, like, you know, following all the festivals around. They never had any hip-hop back then. And then the Hilltop Hoods just started cracking it. But then us on an independent label is like, how are we ever going to get on here? And we just didn't know the right people, and we just never had the songs that were cracking through. Then this album, The Sun Never Sets, this propelled us into that festival circuit. And politically, what was happening at that time is we were all staunchly anti-war. We were in the midst of the Iraq War. Something that it felt like the whole world was against. Yet the leaders trudged relentlessly towards war. So it was on everyone's mind. Everyone was you know, disillusioned with what was going on. But it wasn't that much reflected in culture, in the music culture. A lot of people were scared coming out of the U.S. It felt. In the early days, because of after September 11, there was this big, you know, ramp up of patriotism and so on. Our albums always stayed political, but one thing we learned is, you know, it's hard to crack into popular culture going down the political avenue. And it was something that was interesting that, as a promo for this album, Triple J said, hey, why didn't you guys do this new thing that we just started called Like a Version, where you get to pick a cover? So I picked, like, this track that always, like, tugged my heartstrings since a tiny kid. Mm. I was only 19. And as part of that, you know, we did this acoustic set jammed in the Triple J studio. And that went pretty good. And it was the first time I played the accordion on a track. Accordion was something I learned as a kid.
Like the piano and, accordion?
Yeah, piano accordion. Yeah. Oh, I learned it as a kid. And
that's a huge instrument.
Yeah, it represents pretty much just you and Curse of Dialect bringing that into sort of hip-hop. But that's sick. It's good to see.
Yeah. And then as part of that, you know, John Schumann reached out and he liked the song, and he actually came on tour with us and, you know, he'd jump up on stage and
so this is at the end. John Schumann from Red Gum who wrote the song? Is that?
That's right. Yeah, John Schumann from Red Gum.
And this was just for listeners who are maybe a little bit younger or whatever. I Was Only 19 was this, like, super famous, like, anthem against the Vietnam War back in the day. And so when the Herd covered that, that was like a really powerful sort of like an intergenerational You know, here we are doing this same shit again, sending people to die in wars of conquest. It really hit a nerve. It really catapulted you to the next level. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and what was great is on tour, like, because we always did everything ourselves, we never really had that generational knowledge. But John Schumann, he was telling us that, like, what you guys are doing is what we were doing. And, like, we were a political band, like Red Gum. And he was saying that they always had trouble getting on the radio. And it wasn't until they did, like, I've Been to Bali Too, which was a bit more of a joke song, that, you know, they ended up getting really popular and couldn't get ignored. That, you know, some of their more political stuff ended up getting on the radio.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so John was a great person to chat to. Yeah.
And the passion of Schumann's music lives on, remain.
Now, the Herd are playing next weekend at the People's Blockade of the world's largest coal port. I am extremely excited to see that. And your latest track that you released, I think it was last year, was Soul of My Soul. And I'm curious about this because you've got a tour coming up next year and you've got that gig at the Blockade. I'm guessing you're probably going to be playing that song. And the big question on my mind is, are your collaborators, Serene, Mo, and Big Riggs, going to be coming with you? Look, I know that you've given scoops here on Green Left Radio before. If you want to hold your cards close to your chest, that's cool. But I'm just curious.
No,
you know?
It's not.
Give us the scoop. The people are all over the place, and like maybe in the local city we might be able to convince them to jump up on stage with us.
Yeah, okay.
No, we do love performing that song with them. We did get to perform it a few weeks ago at the Enmore for a Palestine benefit gig then, where we had Mo and Serena on stage, which was great. We'll see.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
I guess that's always a challenge, being in a big band, is like the cat herding that goes on, trying to bring everyone together and organise logistics and flights and are you available and all that kind of jazz. This will be the first time that you've played as the Herd. Earthboy played a couple of years back at the People's Blockade, but that's really cool that you're going to be playing there.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Always love a good protest. There's quite a few acts that are playing on the weekend, isn't it?
We're about to talk to Mudrat, who's going to be playing there as well. Garidula is coming down from, I think Garidula is like from Wangan Jangalingu country and has been sort of holding the blockade against Adani, but is like an absolutely dope MC as well. So I'm really excited to see Garidula and a number of other artists playing.
It's something like we've looked forward to. We've always loved seeing what happens each year. Just love seeing it grow as well. Hats off to them. Their messaging is just so on point. It's like just seeing Rising Tide in the interviews in the build-up. It's quite entertaining to watch how the mainstream media is trying to, like, turn it, and then Rising Tide can change the conversation and come out on top.
Yes. Yeah, there's some pretty nimble young people involved there. And interesting parallels, too, because you've got 20 years since the release of The Sun Never Sets, and it's about 20 years since the People's Blockade was happening as well. And I'm sure I hope you play The King Is Dead, because that's a bit of an anthem to the end of the Howard government. And it's interesting.
Good chances that song will come out, yeah.
it's interesting that we're still fighting the same sort of fights against massive fossil fuel exports, but it's also interesting to see how much has changed in that 20-year period. We have made a little bit of progress.
Definitely there's a the fight never stops, isn't it? It's like as long as we're fighting on the right side of history, then we'll always need to keep fighting. But also in other areas you do see a lot more change as well, just like what's happened with Palestine over the last couple of years. It feels like the youth will never be this. The current youth have changed so much on Palestine that in the years to come it could never be the same as you guys get older and take over the world.
Yeah, like the number of Palestine rallies I've been to over the years, they were just really pretty small. And I mean, the genocide is horrific, and Soul of My Soul, I think, really captures that. But it's really been amazing to see the scale, the vast scale of protests around the world. And that's just really shifted, like public opinion has just shifted so much against Israel and its ongoing attempts to conquer what remains of Palestine.
Yeah, and it's an impressive amount of knowledge that's got out there now about what's been happening and the history of the place. So many people know so much more, even including myself. Like, even though I was working on some Palestine projects even like 23 years ago, I've learned more in the last 3 years than I knew before.
Word. All right. Well, we've got to wrap it up. Now, the Herd's obviously playing at the Blockade next year, and then you're going on tour next year. Where can people catch tickets to your tour, particularly here in Melbourne?
Yeah, sure. It's the website's called destroyalllines.com. But I usually just go into Google and search for the Herd tour, and you'll find it. But the Melbourne gig is on the 20th of February at 170 Russell. So that's an 18 plus gig. It'll be a lot of fun coming down to Melbourne again.
Yes. Well,
looking forward to meeting you then, and also at the Blockade, because Green Left is always at the People's Blockade every year. We cover it, and looking forward to seeing you perform, and we love your music, Tracksuit. We hope you keep playing for another 20 years. Your music has really connected across generations during the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, and now against the backdrop of the genocide in Gaza. So, and also the racist Cronulla riots as well. You've done so much to highlight some of these issues. And we're going to go out on a song, Soul of My Soul. That is the protest song by the Herd against the Israel genocide of Palestinians, and it features vocal contributions from Palestinian artists Serene Mo and Big Rids, and all proceeds from the song go to Olive Kids, which is a foundation dedicated to supporting Palestinian children.
Thank you. And it'd be great to meet you all.
Yeah, sick. All right. Thanks, Tracksuit.
Thank you, Zane. Okay. Thanks, Chloe.
Thanks, Tracksuit.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
You are the soul of my soul. It's the removal of the mess. Cleanliness, words they use to sanitize, words they use for genocide, the world's already dead inside. Whatever the IOF said, stenographers in the press said, the moral case for massacres, aided and abetted by yes man. We'll stop until the job is done and war comes at them mopping up. How much blood you gotta shed from children till you got enough? I have seen so many things that I cannot forget. Holocaust is weaponized and we gave Palestine the debt. Trying to gaslight the world, paint the bully as the victim, but it's streaming to our phones. Are you surprised that we don't listen? And I have seen so many parents holding lifeless kids in their arms. Are we supposed to be indifferent and calm?
You are the soul of my soul. I kept your ear, so I hold you close.
87, near an 80-year dad. Bitch, you living in my house and it's time to pay the rent. Cold as shit, what it is, cause genocide ain't death. Persecution, murder, I ain't seen him dead yet. The martyrs so blessed in paradise, they ascend. Ah, yes. But I seen 1,000 kids who's bled. Man, I seen 1,000 moms giving birth without meds. Amputations, operations, and kids with no arms or legs. Now they're claiming liberation, river to seas a death threat. Nah, please, witness. The colonizer cowards playing victims. And everybody wishing that BB would breathe less. Land back now, sick of being stateless. Not complex car, evil what we up against. Simons add the pressure, long live the intifada. Vive la resistance, but vive la intifada. Protecting the oppressed. Now it's a death wish. Televising the real shit. دخلنا على بلادنا ماخذين نص ملاكنا بتقتلوا بولادنا الهيك وعدنا كتابنا ولك اي ديانة بتقولك قتل على ارض مشكلك. No kids in Palestine don't grow up cause you raised a killer. Machine guns threatened by rock throwers who resist the villains. Listen now who displacing millions in the name of religion. So tell me how are you quick to call us terrorists? Someone call an exorcist. It's Palestinian excellence. Yes we have the evidence.
Yes we have the evidence.
نحن ولاد غزة ولا تستقوا على أولادنا. But we taking it back now. Taking it back now. It's free Palestine from the river to the sea.
You are the soul of my soul.
The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining Northeast Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
Welcome back. Listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. It is 8:03 a.m. and we are really excited to welcome to Green Left Radio punk hip-hop rapper Mudrat.
Good morning, thanks for having me.
Bloody good to have you here.
Now, the last time we saw you, Mudrat, do we call you Mudrat or do we call you Sean?
Either or is fine.
Mudrat.
Yeah.
You were performing at the pro-Palestine protest across from the forum. Mm. That let Zionist pro-Israeli group Infected Mushrooms, I'm sorry to invoke their name, but they were allowed to perform there. And since then, you performed sort of in solidarity with Palestine, but also in opposition to them. And that was really cool. There were hundreds of us there to see you. And since then, you've been on tour. How was that?
Yeah, very interesting. Lots of fun in, I guess, like the musical side of things. And we got to play some beautiful venues. And I got to go to Perth for the first time. They have publicly funded car parks. I've been telling everybody because I didn't know this was a thing. And it drives down the cost of parking. It's incredible. Yeah, you get like 3 hours free parking and then like a competitive parking rate. I'm like, oh my God, imagine we transpose this to groceries or housing. That would be great, guys. yeah, I haven't been able to stop thinking about that. But it was cool. It was very much not a politically engaged audience or headliner, which made the challenge of trying to, you know, be the first kind of crack in somebody's mind interesting. And we figured it out as we went on across the shows, because we do try to change it depending on who we're playing for. And I feel like by the Gaddy show we got there. So yeah,
cool.
Got sick though, so you know.
Grim.
Now, Mud, right, your music brings together elements of grunge, hip-hop and punk.
Mm.
Can you tell us about some of your influences as a musician?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was, I guess, more in the hip-hop world for about 6 years under a previous alias. I would, yeah, probably say that Kendrick Lamar was my... I guess main person that I studied, but I didn't get taught a lot of good things by my father, but the best thing that he taught me was to take inspiration from everything, because everything has some sort of value, particularly in music. But Kendrick, definitely, for the, I guess, the intentionality that he puts in every aspect of his song crafting and album crafting in particular. I'm a big like concept macro person, so because probably I'm a man, so like everything has to be there for a reason, whereas I'm trying to like challenge that notion a little bit now and sort of let things be. But in terms of the more rocky aspects of it, it was like a genre that I liked how it made me feel, and obviously like Rage Against the Machine and System of a Down and sort of that new metal era when I was growing up was very popular. But I make no sort of secret that I'm new to this genre and don't try to feel like I have all the musical answers, and that's why the band's there. So they kind of, yeah, I feel like I've kind of see music as more a catalyst for trying to achieve the things that we do, which means I don't think about like what to be in music. We kind of just let the song serve the purpose and start with like why are we making something before we even commit to a sonic sort of template.
I'm Noah Moderat. Your album Social Coercion came out this year, and the first track of that song is called Acknowledgement, which is an acknowledgement to country. Can you tell us a bit about that and why you decided to put the proceeds to that track towards those causes?
Yeah, it's been interesting because I think so much of the success of this project is doing things that I feel like are the bare minimum, and then you kind of get like celebrated for that. But I guess then when you pull yourself out and you're like, oh, these things aren't being done, it makes a bit more sense, I think. But the project was created on stolen land. Our music, the point of the album as a whole was to capture both my personal, journey over the past 2 years, which has been I wasn't this person both spiritually and politically and emotionally when it started. So I've gone through this process myself, and I'm trying to showcase how that can be done for anybody, as well as, I guess, macro, encapsulating everything that's happened within both the city and the world. And then, you know, you're always facing the dilemma of, performative action versus something having actual tangible benefits. So it made sense to, the best that we could do was think that if we just gave away all the proceeds to the BPU for that particular track, it just makes sense because I shouldn't be profiting off a land acknowledgement. I think that would be a bit silly. So,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah, nice. And have you had much to do with Black People's Union?
Yeah, just you know, I listen and I learn. I think that's the main thing in terms of the engagement. But obviously, we've done some stuff at Camp Sovereignty and performed a few times and just been there for various community events. But yeah, just I think it's just my place to take in the knowledge and materially support when we can.
Mm. Rock and roll. Now, it's interesting, you spoke about moving away from kind of like orthodox hip-hop mm-hmm. and going on a bit of a different tangent. I'm sure you'd be probably a fan of Kneecap.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting how they've gone on that more kind of rave hip-hop tangent, whereas you've gone on this more kind of punk grunge tangent, and it's really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, there's definitely a, I think... like if you look back reflectively, is that a word? I'm not sure. But there is a some sort of movement of artists that I guess have aligned with what art should be across the past few years, and you know, counterculture does typically become a more predominant sort of thing in tough economic times. And then, you know, we've also all just witnessed the genocide, which is probably the first time in history that it's been, you know, this viewable, and therefore the impacts of that, you know, probably going to be something that hasn't been happened before in history. So yeah, I think we say all the time in the band that punk is an essence and not a sound. And so I think we're seeing, you know, quite a few acts in across various genres, I guess, embrace that mentality, and whatever the sonics happen to be that's authentic to them is cool. But I think there's a connection between a lot of those acts.
Hmm. Yeah, I was hearing kind of echoes of Briggs' Big Noda a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite distinct. It's a new sound, and I really dig it.
Mm.
And who's in the band? Who? What's?
Yeah.
Drums, bass. What's the?
My three best friends, who I'm very, very lucky to, you know, obviously be in a project that's doing well, but also be with some beautiful, safe men. The bassist is Noah, who is also our engineer, photographer, videographer, just Mr. Does It All. And then Emil is the drummer, who also sings. If you've ever seen him play, he's got one of the most incredible voices ever. But he and I have been long-term collaborators since 2017, and we played a lot of shows together to two people. So it's, I think, part of the satisfaction of having people in our... at our shows now is like being, because like, he's always been this incredible talent that's been with me, and I've been like, why are you playing to Laundry Bar with three people with me? Like, you are so good. And then Harvey just joined the band this year as a guitarist, and he's kind of been this final glue piece. He was in Dancing Water before this as the bassist. Noah, the bassist, is actually a guitarist, and I didn't realize this when I was like, you should play guitar and you should play bass, but it's created this weird sort of synergy where they kind of know each other's instruments, but then they're exploring a new realm together, and it's just this little bit of magic that's all kind of happened by accident.
Sick.
Now, Mudra, one of the reasons we got you on the show, it's not just because your music is awesome, but it's also because you are one of the artists that is going to be performing at the People's Blockade,
mm-hmm.
of the world's largest coal port up in Moolambimba, Newcastle, at the end of this month. And we were just talking to Tracksuit from The Herd before, who's also going to be performing. What do you think about this kind of solid festival atmosphere and the importance at protests like this blockade?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think there's like two trains of thought. One is that you know, I think it makes a lot of sense, and that the mass mobilization of people due to both the cause and the festivities is and it actually being utilized you know, as a direct action method is a really good idea and probably should be replicated. But then I guess the other side is the whole you know, rest is revolutionary, like type very liberal sort of thing of like engaging in only nice actions, and not to say that it is that, but I don't know. So you just kind of always are contemplating two different I guess factors. But yeah, I think it's a very cool thing, and very much in alignment with the way in which we're trying to transpose creativity in general to political and social action, and this definitely seems in complete alignment with that. So I'm very interested to see how it all goes. Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing you perform there.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting you make that point. I'd say the People's Blockade of the coal port's been going for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. Not like every year. Mm-hmm. And music has always been a bit of an element. Not necessarily high-profile mm-hmm. artists like yourself or The Herd, but I think it part of the thinking there was kind of drawing on that tradition. Probably the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras really mm-hmm. comes to mind, where at that time where the Mardi Gras first happened, people were like, oh, we keep having these dry political protests every week and we're getting our ass kicked by the cops and no one wants to turn up. But if we make it fun and vibrant and a big street parade and there's music and there's drag, it'll be a fun experience and more people will come along and we'll have more power in numbers. And I think, yeah, it's interesting though that you're cognizant of, like, if you go too far down that path of just having fun, the politics becomes diluted. But I think you can also go too far in the other direction where it's a bit dry and a bit dead. So I think activist musos have such an important role to play there.
100%, and it's I think that the balancing of, you know, those two notions is important for everything. Even if you are doing the right thing, it's important to always consider how something could slide one way or the other. But from everything that I've heard, it does sound like exactly what music was intended to, you know, serve. And given that the cause is, you know, so much history and the action of people showing up as already established, it makes complete sense that this will be in all that balance. But yeah, I think I always just ask myself the hard question at all times, because I think sometimes you're going to get it wrong. And so you can kind of screen that as by putting yourself in a bit of discomfort and then moving forward anyway.
If you've just tuned in, we are speaking to punk hip-hop rapper Mudrat on Green Left Radio, Friday Breakfast on 3CR. Mudrat, given the political nature of your music, like your support for Palestine, have you ever encountered any problems singing your songs? And a related question to this that comes from Matt Ward. And Matt Ward is a Green Left journalist, a music columnist, also a musician in his own right, and is the one that wrote the review on your album.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Yeah. Shout out to you, Matt. His question is, how do you deal psychologically and politically with any backlash to your strong political opinions?
The backlash is, I get asked this question a bit, and it's not quite as cut and dry, black and white as it might appear, because this project was, I think, birthed in, it wasn't like I was doing Mudrat and then decided now's the time to be very out there with you know, my political point of view. It literally started because I felt away in October 2023, and we've just kind of been going from there, and I've had to grow into the person that I am today. But of course there is there are a lot of, you know, downsides. I'm concerned about my safety and, you know, I'm sure we have missed opportunities due to the, you know, potential, I'm putting my commas up for everyone listening at home, but risk of having us on a, you know, a festival or whatever it is. But I have to also acknowledge that, like, I've benefited a great deal by doing these things. And so it's not necessarily that, you know, we've done the Bob Dylan thing where we've been on stage and then said something and then had this, like, big swarm of pushback, which is probably coming, but it hasn't happened yet. And I think scale is important. I think the bigger, the more visible we are to the mainstream. But, like, yeah, I've been covered in the Australian, was called a Hamas hipster. A bloody, yeah, terrible article, but...
You got a song about that.
Yeah, no, everyone said that. psychologically, yeah, it's been a lot, but it's kind of why I've always said this is not a forever thing. There's just things that we want to do and say and actions that we want to take to kind of show what is possible, what you have access to as an artist, which is not... financial security, but because you have attention, there are things that you can do to make a difference in the world, and that does come at a psychological cost, but I'm navigating it as best as I can.
Great. Well, we admire your political courage and your strong stance on particularly Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
Did any other presenters want to ask a question before we wrap up the interview? Oh, well, actually, we do have a little bit more time left. About 5 minutes? Yeah, go.
I've got a question as well. Kind of leading off from that, do you find having the alias name kind of helps with that separation? Because I know that for me, I get a similar response sometimes where people are like, you know, unimpressed by something you've said, but I've said it under my, like, real ass legal name. So just having the Mudrat alias, does that help you kind of, like, separate things a bit?
For a time, until my real name got out there, which I tried to delay as long as possible, but it was just inevitable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then it's just thinking about security and making sure that, you know, you're covering your tracks in terms of getting your name off the electoral roll. And if you don't know about that, that's a whole thing that should be done. And, like, I haven't got a LinkedIn. I work a, you know, a job that I wouldn't want to be at risk for this because me and my mum are still renting. So I've got to keep the food coming in and money coming in. Sorry. So, yeah, there's definitely, you know, I guess a healthy sense of paranoia that is constantly kind of there, but you do get, this wasn't a band at the start and we formalized that this year, which has meant that there has been a greater sharing of the, I guess, the burden of responsibility, which has definitely made it more sustainable because this point last year I was very burnt out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now, we're going to play towards the tail end of the show, which is fairly soon, Bars, which you performed on Triple J. But just to rewind the clock, in the early 90s, NWA released their album, I forget the name of that album, I should probably know it, but it had songs like F the Police and Express Yourself. Now, when F the Police came out, there was this massive moral panic and scandal about, you can't play a song that says F the Police. And staff at Triple J, and it's crazy to think of this now, went on strike. They said, no, there is a principle here. Mm. People are talking about violence and murder of people of colour by the cops. And if they want to use a swear word and say F the police, they should be able to bloody do that. And it's a very popular song. And we reserve our right to play it. And we are going on strike for 24 hours. Mm. And we're just playing Express Yourself on endless loop until you give us the green light to play the frickin' song.
Mm.
And to look back at that is like a world away from the ABC today that's not really, it's as you mentioned in the song, it's providing cover for genocide. But then within the ABC umbrella, there's Triple J, the youth broadcaster. Surely if there was one little corner of the ABC that was able to reflect majority opposition to the genocide amongst young people, openly and clearly, it's Triple J. I'm getting outraged just talking about it. But can you comment on that? Because your outrage comes through really quite palpably in the track, I must say.
Yeah, I think part of this process of the last few years is like that heartbreak, I think, that of the things that we were attached to prior to the genocide beginning, and then the genocide shining this light on the realities of, you know, what so many of like our heroes might actually be like in real life, and I guess some of these, I guess, institutions that we might have believed in. And I think the unfortunately it is there are some good people that work there on the presenting kind of thing that are some friends of mine, but the corporatization of that station and you know, I guess the ABC in general is a massive issue that was none more obvious than the actions that they took throughout the past few years. And so you are right that that should have been the place where it should have been said. And, you know, they're saying things now, when now it's safe to, but they then wonder why they are losing their youth audience and why they're, I guess, like a social kind of credibility or just like relatability for young people isn't quite the same that it is. But it's, you know, in order to do that, you've got to take risks and lead with an authentic purpose. And there's a whole like market to everybody, market to nobody sort of thing, which is very capitalistic, but I guess in this sense, from like an ethics kind of perspective, you know, I grew up in the 2000s and we heard about that and that was cool, and it had this edge to it because of the actions that were taken. So it's kind of like two things being true at the same time, where, you know, they lose the edge and they lose over time the I guess the social credibility or whatever the word is. But
did you get any backlash from Triple J calling them out on their own platform?
No, but it was set up by design to be that way. It was like it was just either they put it out or we do something else about them not putting it out. We were like in the top 9 for the Australian Music Prize for, you know, the best albums related this year. We weren't put on the Triple J stuff, not to be to assume that we would have, but I have a feeling that we might not be played as much going forward. But also, you know, there are people there that will play us anyway. But part of the easiness of taking that risk was kind of being like, well, it doesn't actually really matter if you play us or not, because you're not what you once were. So,
word. All right, well,
it's a good time to quickly plug Green Left and 3CR, both independent of corporate interests. We're entirely funded by the community, ordinary people like you and me, and we put radical voices like Mudrat here on air. And it is important that people support us, independent, radical media that have always told the truth on Palestine and given voice to the oppressed, and also supported the campaigns to fight against the genocide in Gaza and all other right. things.
Well, without further ado, thank you very much for speaking with us, Mudrat, and here is Bars. And we'll see you at the blockade.
One, sir. Yeah. Let's talk about conflict and an economy of optics, where the truth dies so as long as the stock lives. The mind's eye is the new zeitgeist. You don't need to think twice. Let's talk about conflict, take it out of context. Time as a construct, history a concept. Victory the lost bet, stepping is the fall. You don't need to think twice. If I came up here praying the deaths, I'll name my list of lames. I'll go flaming a spliff like drinking the red cocaine. Every exerc a stiff, cause nothing drives a price like a... You love shanks and chips till a kid gets chipped. You love bloods and crips till a blood gets clipped. Cause conflict is content, click it for more. You don't need to think twice. No, 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 think twice. What you see with your eyes, now the feeling in your gut is at war with your mind. Your words have power that they try to deny. So let's talk about a conflict and broaden a lie. Decide what is conflict, decide what is context. Whose side that is object?
For he who writes a line now divides a line between white lies and consent. May 7th, 1990, NWA for 24 straight. You stood against censorship, stood against executives, but where do you stand now, Triple J? Shout out Antoinette Latouf, my career's in a noose, but I'll take a blacklist over censoring the booth. There's blood on these walls for the lies that are spewed, trying to both sides, well there's no right to be skewed. Now tell me is it conflict, tell me is it complex, 50,000 dead, but tell me on a context. It's too late to be vetted at the news, cause the ABC has been burying the truth. Brutal cold bitch, so we have to fight, when all has been tried, but it's not in sight. So we pick up the sword, gonna kill the lies, speak it the truth, speak it to verify. Israel is committing them, Israel is committing them, Israel is committing them. Genocide, genocide, no, 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 now is that hate speech? Is it make-believe? When even Israeli orcs said the same thing? So when shit is a band, will you stand and fight back? Will you cave this on the air? Will you cave it on wax? If Jill Siegel calls your people and tries to cut the funding, will you fall on knees or by Muhammad himself like NWA? 24 hours straight, tell me one more time, it's free, 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 free. Free, 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 free.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.